Welcome to Pro Soccer Weekly.
Pro Soccer Weekly.
What in the hell is up with these red cards, boys?
Well, where do we start? I mean, hot off the press. I've been watching Sky Sports tonight, and obviously there was four of them. Two were, you know, clear as day. Leno's handball outside the box, he has to go. The young kid for Southampton making his debut, felt sorry for him, but it was a horror challenge, really. Alex Yankovic, that was a, you know, he could have got three red cards for that challenge. But the other two, Badnarik and David Luiz, both of them, there's a really interesting sort of reasoning behind these two decisions, and we both were obviously not red cards as we know them, but by the letter of the law, we were. I was listening to the, you know, nobody's talking about the games anymore and what happens in the games. You know, the goal scored, great passing movements, great defending, and what have you. It's always about VAR, and it's getting a lot of people down. But I think David Luiz, he's made no attempt to challenge the boy. And he's been sent off. Had he made a challenge, he would have been yellow carded. Had he made a genuine attempt for the ball, but he wasn't even trying to make an attempt, and he gets a red card. So for me, that's wrong. In the first instance, the Badnarik one, he was seen walking down the tunnel at Old Trafford, saying live on camera that Anthony Martial had said it wasn't a penalty. And whether he said that, you know, in real time, but it wasn't a penalty. Martial should have got booked for that. You know, my problem with Martial is, well, why is he going to go down 6 yards from goal? Just put the ball in the back of the net and let everybody get on with the game. Interestingly enough, the Badnarik one has been rescinded today, so he's available at the red card. Obviously, doesn't help Southampton on the day, but he's available for the next match. Whereas David Luiz is, he's trying to get it out of the way. That has been upheld. So, you know, there's a whole program about, you know, do we understand the rules? Do we make a tackle? If we're not trying to make a tackle, it's a complete accident, we get a red card. If we make a tackle and it's a foul, it's a yellow card. It's absolutely embarrassing. You know, we don't know whether to make head and the tail of it, Phil. So, you know, I thought obviously David Luiz and Badnarik were real harsh for me, not red cards. The other two, definite.
And we're talking about the Newcastle game and the Arsenal game, and we got hosed by four different red cards. Welcome to Pro Soccer Weekly. My name is Phil Nasons. That gentleman who was talking is Gary Lewis, and Eric Lorandini has been on mute most of the time. What's up, Eric?
Hey, how's it going, Phil? How's it going, Gaz? Everybody good?
Hey, what's up, eh?
Yeah,
everyone's
good.
We're good.
Listen, you can find this show daily at CSN Sports Radio. You can also find it as part of the Cash with Flash Best Bets Radio Network at philnasonshow.com. We're on every podcast catcher of choice, and we're lamenting two picks we made on Wednesday. Neither one of them panned out. Both of them were in the driver's seat. We would have cashed big, but the stupid freaking red cards killed us.
Agreed.
Agreed, yeah. Well, the games were actually the Arsenal game and the Man U game. They were the two that were, you know, heavily populated with red cards.
Not so much
the Newcastle game.
Too many red cards.
Yeah, I mean, okay, I don't know what your take on it is, Ed.
Well, I mean, listen, the two that we discussed, Luiz and Bednarik, I mean, I got to agree with you on that. There's just, you know, it's like the game is played at such a fast and athletic pace now that, you know, we've discussed this, you know, in various different levels, the rulings on things like offsides and fouls and handballs and all that and so on and so forth. The game has evolved and continues to evolve. It continues to get played faster and more physical. I think that as athletic as you are, you sometimes just can't avoid a situation, even though you may try to. And it just, you know, if someone doesn't perceive it the same way that you were trying to react in that particular situation, unfortunately, you know, they're going to watch the videotape. They're going to see what they see. You know, in some of these cards, really, and again, I see the Bednarek one being rescinded, which to me makes perfect sense. And, you know, ultimately in that game, his red card meant nothing. That game was, you know, done and dusted at that point anyway. So, you know, I just think that there has to be, you know, way more consistency in you know, the rulings here. And I think it goes back to, again, we discussed this, you know, in the VAR booths, having former players in there who can maybe read a situation better or differently than someone who maybe has never played the game at that level. So, you know, again, listen, I'm more disappointed in the fact that the red cards mightily disrupted our ability to predict games. And I know we had a conversation about this. How can you predict games when things like this are happening? And the answer is you can't. Right.
Well, you don't. Referees are part of the game, and these bad calls. Do you remember the first thing I said to you guys? Welcome to the world of bad beats. That was a correct. Bad beat. Because Arsenal was in charge of that game. Okay, that was a red card. That was a dumb play. It was a red card. That's the way it is. Okay, so we hand that off. Newcastle, though, that game? Newcastle was in the driver's seat. You can see the momentum clearly their way. Not only one red card taken, but two red cards. That's a little too much. I don't know about these last names and who they are, but I can tell you this. When I saw the first red card in the second game, I just flipped it to the news or cable news because I already knew the outcome. But the great thing is at least Arsenal almost won that game anyway, though. And they had a couple of chances at the end. You know, they were down 11-9 and only lost 2-1. That's not bad.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, what I'm going to start doing is having a look at who's refereeing the games that we're predicting.
Well, that's important. I mean, you know, that's important.
That should be something that we include, definitely, because, you know, the referee on Tuesday at Old Trafford, Mike Dean. I'm not a big fan of his anyway. You know, he's a seasoned veteran, really, in the Premier League, and he's shelled out more red cards than many other referees put together in his career. You know, everybody calls him card happy. You know, and it always seems to be about him. You know, he's lost an awful lot of respect, and I would imagine. Listen, you know, you look at the rota of referees that are. You know, designated certain games over the week. You get it on a Monday or a Tuesday morning, you know, and you've got to, I would imagine, you know, managers are factoring into the tactics and into the way they're talking to the players about including the refereeing, which is absolutely ridiculous, seeing as they, you know, they're completely neutral. My biggest thing is with all this VAR and all this shenanigans is that how can they get it so wrong when they've got people? And I agree with what you're saying, Ek, 100% behind that, where they should have, you know, past players who are on the panel, at least. It doesn't have to be, you know, completely player, ex-player led, but there has to be an opinion from a playing side to achieve the right decision or to come to the right decision. And, you know, probably will happen at some point, but... You know, the fact that they've also got, they've obviously got their earpiece, but they've got a TV, they've actually got a monitor at the side of the pitch. And Mike Dean went to that monitor and still give a penalty. I mean, you know, it beggars belief. And like I say, he's probably the most seasoned referee that we have in the Premier League, albeit one of the worst, in my opinion, and a lot of other people's opinions in the game. And yet he got the decision so wrong, you know. As Eric said, it didn't change the game at all. I think that was the seventh or eighth goal that United scored on the day. Obviously, the game was done at half-time. But, you know, for him to get something so wrong, having used the monitor, having spoken to, obviously, the guys down south, and then having seen the incident, you know, he's got three chances there, and he's still got it wrong. So, you know, where do we go from here? I just don't
know. Listen, two things to add to that. One, okay, when we're sitting at home watching a match and the foul or the potential foul occurs, and they constantly show you the replays on TV, every one of us, every single one of us is seeing what the official is now seeing, or has the opportunity to break down, analyze, rewind, watch again, zoom in, do all those things that's just available to him. But meanwhile, you and I, sitting on our couches, can get those calls right after watching them in review. I'm not suggesting that we're going to get that call right the majority of the time watching it live, because it happens so fast. But when you have that opportunity to go back, break it down, review it, watch it over and over and over again. I know, Gaz, you have an opinion. I know I have an opinion, and we're pretty staunch about our opinions. No way that's a foul. And sometimes we're even communicating regarding these things during the course of the game. And at least they have the ability after the fact to go back and review it and maybe make what was wrong right. Now, again, in this situation, it didn't matter. But in a lot of other situations, it matters tremendously whether
it impacts. And it costs managers jobs.
It costs managers jobs. It costs people money. It just... And it creates a further influence on with social media on and now the players' backlash. And then it becomes this whole thing, which is really unnecessary. My second point is, and we discussed this before regarding referees, I know at one of my matches, if I have a particular referee showing up for that game, I'm immediately instructing my kids, my players, on what this referee's pet peeves are, what he'll never call, what he always is looking to call, and make them aware of that from the beginning. So if I'm doing it, they're certainly doing it in the English Premier League.
100%. Well, you would hope they are. You would hope they are. And if you pay attention, if anyone out there is listening and they've read any of my books, I use officiating big time. I don't know enough about the EPL referees to do that, but these guys do. And we're going to start paying closer attention to that. But we have Champions League next week, guys. Champions League, it's the round of 16. We have 8 teams playing on Tuesday and Wednesday. And what we're going to do today is we're going to take a look at the 4 games this coming week. We'll be doing this for the next, I don't know what, 3 or 4 weeks, breaking down games, offering our opinions on players and whatever, and then we'll provide the picks on Monday. So you have to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, follow us at CastWithFlash.com or at CSN Sports Radio, because we're going to give you picks. But what we're going to do today is we're going to break them down so that you can go back and listen to our reasoning and see where we got it right, see where we got it wrong, and maybe make some good decisions about subscribing to Pro Soccer Weekly. But those referees, guys, it is what it is. It's part of the life. I remember when I was umpiring baseball, because I umpired baseball and I also did basketball, refereed basketball and football. And I was known as a low ball umpire behind the plate, meaning the strike zone was lower. I did that on purpose because I didn't want foul balls bouncing off my arms, because I need my arms for tennis. And no one complained because they all knew it. The most important thing in officiating is consistency. If you're inconsistent, everything goes to shambles. And unfortunately in that game, those 2 games, the Arsenal one, okay, I get that one. But the Newcastle game, I'm still wondering how that worked out. I didn't even see the Man U game. I know they scored a lot of goals. But we've got Liverpool and Leipzig playing on Tuesday. Now, Leipzig is a plus 220 home underdog, I believe. And Liverpool is plus 120. Now, each of the guys is going to take a team, and we're going to see what they come up with. So go ahead. Who's got Liverpool in? What are they going to do to win this game against Leipzig?
Well, first and foremost, Phil, the game's in doubt. Germany have put a flight ban on any flights arriving from what they call the red zones. And the UK is probably at the top of that. Top of that list at the moment.
The entire world is, you know, by the way.
European travel. You know, hey, listen. Let's take it as though the game's gonna. Listen, I think it'll go ahead. I mean, this obviously you know, certain plans in place and exemptions and things like that. Whether that's right or wrong is another cast. But Liverpool, obviously, they had a bit of a dodgy result last night, getting beat at home to Brighton. I think they haven't lost in 67 games at Anfield over the last 2 or 3 years, and you know, they've lost twice at home in the last 10 days. So yeah, in terms of the top, you know, top six in England, they're probably feeling it as much as anybody else, probably more so. They've had a lot of injuries to deal with. Obviously, they sailed through the group stages, and you know, they played a lot of fringe players and give them experience and things like that. So it was more of a sort of an experience exercise for them. Coming into this game, you know, the interesting thing for me is that it's the new Jurgen Klopp versus the present Jurgen Klopp, in terms of Nagelmans and obviously Jurgen Klopp. Biggest worry for me for Liverpool is the issues that they have at the back. They've obviously lost Virgil van Dijk, who's arguably the best central defender on the planet. He's obviously he's not going to play any part probably till, you know, next term really. Joe Gomez is out as well. He was his partner, and they were, you know, we've spoke about this on numerous occasions about, you know, how solid you need to be at the back defensively to have any chance of winning any football match, let alone, you know, when the stakes are as high as these. So I think that they're going to be a massive miss. Joel Matip as well, he's been in and out. I think he's going to be injured for the game. Other than that, you know, as long as they can play the game in Leipzig's half, with the attacking prowess that Liverpool have got, I mean, they're going to score against virtually any team on the planet. They're unbeaten in 10 games versus German opposition, which was an interesting fact that was reading the other day. And they're actually unbeaten in 5 games, actually in Germany, on German soil. I think at the moment Liverpool are a bit indifferent domestically. I think they've had a couple of good results. They seem to be finding form, but I think if they get the defensive issues right on the night, I think they'll still have too much for Leipzig moving forward. But listen, this is the knockout stage now. Leipzig didn't start too well in the group stages, obviously with the five shipping five in at Old Trafford, but you know, they gathered momentum and sort of held their own, more than held their own going through. So it'll be an interesting game. I'm looking forward to seeing how both managers match each other up, you know, in terms of how they set the teams up and what have you. But I think for me here, I think if Liverpool can get the defensive issues right, I think they'll go through.
On to Leipzig, I guess. So I agree with Gaz. I think actually the story here is going to come down to the probably the two highest profiled German coaches, Nagelsmann and Klopp, at this point. I think this is going to be a match of wits between the two of them, and who's going to be able to put the right game plan, you know, out in the matches. I mean, these two sides have no history of playing each other. So nothing to go on there. They're both high-powered attacking sides, so it should make it for an exciting matchup. And again, you've got last year's winner versus semifinalists. So I think it definitely should be interesting. As far as Leipzig's experience, they played English sides only 4 times. At home, they played two. They have 2 wins and 2 away. They played one. They have 1 win and 1 draw. So at home, they played two. They have 2 wins. Away, they played two, and they have 1 win and a draw. So total 3 wins and a loss. 7 goals for and goals against. Again, not enough of a sampling to have a measurable impact. Leipzig in the Champions League competition, knockout rounds for the second time after their semifinal run last year. finishing second behind PSG in a tough Group H that included United. You know, so it definitely took something to get out of that. So this is their in the competition for third time in 4 years. So they've secured another spot in the round of 16. They won all of their home games in the group stage, losing their first two away games. And then they closed things out with a crucial win over Istanbul. In the semifinals in 19-20, they beat Tottenham, who was the 18-19 runner-up, and then Atletico Madrid. So last year they had a good run, before they got to PSG in the semifinals. Leipzig has won 12 of their 22 Champions League matches with three draws and seven losses. None of their 22 Champions League matches have ended goalless. That's more than any other side in the history of the Champions League tournament. They are unbeaten in their last six home Champions League matches. However, they've only kept two clean sheets in 10 of their home matches. So, I mean, that definitely favors Liverpool to some extent, who definitely has the ability to score some goals. But again, they've conceded 12 goals in their six group stage matches, which is more than any other round of 16 qualifier this year. Angelino, I think, is going to be a key here. He's been involved in six of their goals, three goals and three assists in the group stage. So I think his involvement and activity is going to be important. His chipping in is going to be important for sure. Leipzig will be missing a bunch of players. Probably the most prominent is Szoboszlai is going to be out, missing several others as well, too. I'm not sure about this line at this point with the way Liverpool, their form has been lately. It's not great. And I think you might see the money lines get a little bit closer as we get closer to the games. But, I think that this is going to be a good matchup. You know, I think that if Leipzig can go ahead and get a home win, it leaves, everything for possibility.
You know, when I look at these lines, the first thing that I kind of rule out when I look at this, I like to look at what the total is, and right now the total sits at three goals over under. There, it's plus 106 for over and minus 121 for under. So the bookies are looking for this game to be lower than three goals. But when you look at the draw number at plus 264, they don't expect it to be a draw. So
one thing we need to think about as well here, Phil, is that obviously Liverpool are playing Man City at the weekend. You know, they'll be looking to bounce back from the defeat at home last night, certainly. But obviously, they've got to make a balancing act here between what side we put out, the amount of energy that we're going to exert in the Man City game, because obviously Man City at the moment are top of the league. So I think that'll come into Jurgen Klopp's squad rotation as well. So I think in terms of, you know, our picks, it's something that we've got to keep our eye on over the weekend.
Well, of course we do. That's a fact. You know, that's important to pay attention to domestic league on the weekends. You know, especially in Liverpool's situation, they still think that they can win the EPL, right? So they're not going to be happy losing at home to a team they probably shouldn't have lost to. But it is what it is. But I would look at this sheet right now, if I were betting, and obviously our picks won't be ready till Monday, but I think you can almost eliminate the draw. I just don't think it fits that way. I also think that a good play is the goal line, because Liverpool to win by more than a goal is plus 117, and Leipzig to get beat by a goal or more is minus 137. So you're going to look at that too. So there's all kinds of ways to make money on this game. We'll let you know for sure on Monday. You can find it again, Instagram, at Cash with Flash, Twitter, at Cash with Flash, cashwithflash.com for the picks. We'll be there. But that's a great breakdown. Wow, I don't even know who to take now. You guys both made great points. Now, this one here, Barcelona and Paris Saint-Germain, or PSG as they like to be known as, or were commonly referred to as, PSG is plus 185. Barcelona is plus 136, and the draw is plus 266. This game also has a three-goal total. The over is minus 124. The under is plus 104. And there's also all kinds of backbiting over some comments about Lionel Messi maybe coming to PSG. Who we got, guys? Go ahead. Who's up?
All right. I got PSG, so I'll get started here. Plenty of drama to be had with this matchup. PSG is returning to Spain. Neymar's returning to Camp Nou. And the memory of a record Champions League comeback in their last meeting. Barca, with the Neymar playing a key role, overturned a 4-0 first leg defeat in the round of 16 4 years ago with a 6-1 second leg. So definitely some excitement, and definitely going to be some people really anxious to recover from that, or to push past that, get that off of their experience with one another. Much has happened at PSG since the group stage. Thomas Tuchel is out and replaced by Mauricio Pochettino. He's quite familiar with Barcelona as both a player and a coach. In 14-15, these sides faced each other four times. Two times in a group stage where Barca claimed the top spot. Neymar scored three goals in that season's quarterfinal, which was won by Barca. In 2012-2013 quarterfinal, Barcelona beat PSG on away goals. Barca has won four or five latest matches between sides. Let's get into PSG's form at this point. They've won four of their six group stage games, including their last three: home versus Leipzig, away at Manchester United, and home versus Istanbul, securing first place in Group H. Neymar is a joint leading scorer with six goals in this year's competition. PSG is the present League One champions for seventh time in eight years and ninth time overall. And this is their ninth successive Champions League campaign and 13th overall, reaching Champions League final last year, losing to Bayern 1-0. They've reached the knockout stage in their last nine Champions League appearances. However, prior to last year's finals, they suffered three successive round of six defeats. Last year's comeback versus Dortmund ended this run of defeats. During the 2019 and 2020 finals, they finished the group first in group stage, playing against Real Madrid, Club Brugge, and Galatasaray, and they conceded only two goals in that group stage campaign. They've scored in 32 consecutive group stage matches, winning 16 of their last 24. They've been victorious in eight of their last 15 away Champions League matches, so winning just a little bit over 50% of their away matches. PSG has won only two of their last 11 matches against Spanish clubs, with two draws and seven losses. Their four losses are from the most recent contest. So PSG record in two-legged ties against Spanish sides is five wins and four losses. Three of those versus Barcelona and one versus Real Madrid. They've not beaten a La Liga side since beating Valencia in the round of 16 in the 2012-2013 campaign. Players to look for: top goal scorers presently are Neymar with six, Mbappe with two. Assists, you've got Keane with two, Mbappe with two, Di Maria with two, Rafinha with one. So as you can see, they get contributions from many players in supporting their goal scoring. The last five favor Barca heavily with four wins. Neymar has recently signed a four-year extension with PSG, so no pressure there. And I think going forward, he's going to be pedal to the metal as far as winning the golden boot in this competition and looking to get his team past Barcelona. A couple of individual notes, Neymar has scored as many goals at Camp Nou, 16, as he has at Parc des Princes, 16, in Champions League matches. He's gone three matches without scoring in this, three matches in a row without scoring in this campaign, and he's never gone four. PSG is anticipating missing a number of players, Navas, Marquinhos, Verratti and Diallo apparently were out with COVID, and not sure what their status is going to be if they're returning. Herrera will also be out. And that's what I got.
I think I'm going to keep it a little shorter and a little bit more recent than PSG's history over the last 20 years. For me, Barcelona win this game, win the tie. As Eric said, listen, Neymar going back to his old club. I mean, obviously he left under a cloud, really. You know, everybody knew he was going for money, but Eric's right there. You know, probably one of the most exciting comebacks, other than Liverpool versus Barcelona a couple of years ago, for them to go through to the Champions League final. You know, they had the backside handed to them in Paris. I think it was 4-0, something like that, and then they ended up winning 6-1. And Neymar was probably the best player over the two ties, but certainly on the night in the Nou Camp. And, you know, he was probably unplayable. He's got an awful lot of affection for Barcelona, obviously, where he made his name. I think, obviously, the problems off the pitch became transparent once he'd moved out of the city and he'd ended up in Paris. But he's never sort of denied his love for the club. Listen, he'll be wanting to make an impact on the night. But I mean, in terms of a Barcelona standpoint, since we spoke about the issues with Messi and the you know, the subsequent departure of Bartomeu, things have taken an unbelievable turn for the better for Barcelona. They're on fire at the moment. I think they're sitting second in the league, and you know, the winning games left, right, and centre. And you know, I've watched them quite closely recently, and they're probably 75-80% back to where they were before the circus started 12 months ago. You know, it's going to be under the lights at the Nou Camp. No major injury worries or selection problems for Koeman. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how Pochettino sets up in the Champions League, as opposed to what he's used to, or what he's getting used to now in the in Ligue 1 in France. I mean, for me, Pochettino should have come to Manchester United 12 months ago, but obviously, you know, that didn't happen. And he's an unbelievable coach. He's in a new area. He's obviously in a new country where things are going to be an awful lot easier than what he's used to. But he's always proven himself in sort of Champions League, getting the best out of you know, the underdogs when he was with Tottenham. So I think that'll come into Ronald Koeman's thoughts for sure. But if Barca keep playing the way they're playing, they'll have more than enough for PSG on the night. And I can only see, listen, as I said, with Liverpool, you know, but more so Barcelona, they're finding the form at the right time. So I think this will be a good tie, but I can always see Barcelona going through.
You know, those are great thoughts. Two things for me. One, PSG, that's a big mistake, talking about who they want to bring to their team, and it happens to be the guy they're playing against. That's a big mistake. That's bulletin board material. You never want to give a team more incentive than they already have to beat you, and I think they violated that rule. That was one of my coach's rules a long time ago. Never, ever give your opponent any more incentive than they already have to kick your ass. And I think Lionel Messi's a pretty good player still. He might not be the greatest of all time level like he was 2 years ago, maybe, but he's still pretty damn good. And PSG, again, Neymar, wow. Neymar, he makes news everywhere. He makes news going to the bathroom. And none of it is about his soccer playing. I'm glad that you guys brought that up because he's a fantastic player still, right? But I think PSG's in trouble. I really think so. We'll have that pickup for you on Monday. CashWithFlash.com or on Instagram and Twitter @CashWithFlash. Don't forget to get those because these boys are hot. You know, they only missed like three matches or four matches in total for the first leg of this entire Champions League season. These guys were hot as a $3 pistol, I'll tell you. So now, what do we got next? We have, I still want to talk about Neymar, kind of. But this we don't have time for that, because I have a lot to say about him. FC Porto and Juventus. This should be a good game. I'm looking forward to watching this, actually. And I can't believe I said that, because I'm really not a big fan of Italian football too much. But Juventus, plus 101 favorites. Porto, plus 327. The total is 2.5. And it's a plus 224 draw. Go ahead, boys.
Yeah, intriguing game, this. Porto are doing well at the moment. Not one of the, you know, the giants of European football by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, they've obviously qualified on merit. You know, they were in a tough group with Man City. But from a Juventus point of view, listen, Cristiano Ronaldo at the moment, you know, again, he's on fire. You know, the guy's a machine with assists, with goals, and he's all round, you know, his all round experience is rubbing off on certainly a lot of the younger players at Juventus at the moment that I'm reading. He's also scored in 16 consecutive seasons of the Champions League, which is only matched by, I think it's Messi and Benzema at Real Madrid, which is staggering considering, you know, he's played for arguably, you know, three of the best teams on the planet. Interesting fact about Juventus, Alvaro Morato, he's the joint leading scorer in this season's Champions League. I think he's got 5 or 6 goals. I think Neymar's in that bracket as well as Haaland at Dortmund and Rashford at United. I can't see anything other than a Juventus win here at the moment. You know, as well as Porto are doing at the moment. You know, you've got to think about, you know, their experiences and domestically and on the international stage, European stage, as we've spoke about before. You know, Porto were always there, don't get me wrong, but you know, they're not in they would be in the sort of the second category really in terms of you know big clubs in Europe. Juventus have won it on numerous occasions, and I think with Ronaldo, you know, he keeps setting himself targets, you know, year in, year out. He wants to be the best, the top scorer, the most assists, you know, whatever it may be, and the influence that he actually has in the Champions League is unbelievable. I think it's going to be important to get a goal in Porto, and then obviously take them back to Turin. You know, knowing that either the job's done or knowing full well what they have to do to reach the next stage. So for me, a Juventus win.
Porto. I'm going to agree straight off the bat. I think Juventus is going to run away with this. They're definitely going to, it's my opinion that they're going to win. But there is a lot of experience in the round of 16 between these two clubs. However, the Italian side holds a distinct advantage. In head-to-head, Porto has no wins, a draw and 3 losses, with a goal for and 6 goals against through Juventus. So history does not weigh in Porto's favor. Porto, overall, versus Serie A teams, they've played 15 home games, 5 wins, 6 draws, 4 losses. They've played 15 away games, 4 wins, 3 draws, 8 losses. They've played in 2 finals, and they've lost both. Goals for 30, goals against 33. So, you know, in the goal department, not horrible. However, in the wins department, you know, 9 of 30, it does not fare well for Porto. They did finish second behind City in Group C, conceding only 3 goals and winning 4 of their 6 group stage matches. So, as Gaz said, they did get through on merit. They're unbeaten since losing to City in match day 1. So they won the next 3 at home, and then they had a win in France at Marseille. Before drawing with City. Porto has 5 consecutive clean sheets, so it's not going to be easy to score goals against them. Like I stated, they've only given up 3 goals in the group stage, and they've not conceded a goal in 467 minutes. Porto has been in the Champions League for – this is their 24th, and that's second to only Real Madrid and Barcelona, who both have 25 appearances in the Champions League. Their run ended last year in the round of 16 with a loss to Krasnodar, and then they moved on to the Europa League, and they lost in a round of 32 to Leverkusen. They've lost 4 of their last 10 Champions League games, 5 wins and a draw, and they've won only 4 of their last 9 home European matches. 4 wins and 7 losses in the round of 16, and they've won only 1 of their last 9 in a knockout stage. Porto is the only team thus far not to concede a home goal in the Champions League this year. And just a fun fact, Porto last played a Cristiano Ronaldo team 17 years ago in the round of 16. Ronaldo was with United at the time. So it's been a long time since these sides have seen each other. I'm going with Juventus still, though, to take this matchup.
Okay, that means right now, because you might change your mind by Monday, right?
Yeah, it is possible.
That is possible. Now, let me see here. When I look at this draw from a handicapper standpoint, 2 things stick out to me. The draw is plus 224. That looks like it's perhaps where the bookies are leaning. Perhaps that's what they want. The total at 2.5. Now, over 2.5 is plus 117. Under 2.5 is minus 137. You can profit off the over if you think they're going to score 3 goals. But it really is pointing toward a draw. When you look at the goal line, you see it's a half. They're always a half goal. Juventus to win by a goal is minus 101. Porto to lose by more than 1 goal is minus 114. Everything points to a draw here. We'll have to wait and see what happens. But that was a great breakdown, and I hope that you guys are getting that. When you're ready for the picks, they'll be there on Monday. Don't forget, cashwithflash.com or at cashwithflash on Instagram or Twitter. Now, we've got one more to go, guys. We have Sevilla playing Borussia Dortmund. Go ahead, fellas.
All right. Well, I've got Dortmund in this one. Not nearly as much drama here in comparison to the Barca versus PSG matchup. Head-to-head, again, not a lot going on there. Europa League 2010 group stage, 2-2 draw at Sevilla and a 1-0 loss at home. Total of 3 goals for Sevilla and 2 for Dortmund. So that's really it for the history between these sides. Dortmund's history versus Spanish teams overall, 32 matches in all competitions. It's not good. Away, they've played 15, and they've only come away with a single win in 15 away matches. And they basically can't win in Spain. They have a total of 9 wins, 10 draws, 13 losses, with 41 goals for and 45 goals against. So their history against the Spanish sides, not great. It's fair to say they've not fared well, winning only 1 time in the last 16 visits to Spain. So that's not a good recipe for success for them. Dortmund, they did take the top spot in Group F, playing Lazio, Zenit, and Club Brugge, so not a particularly strong group. They did drop the opening match versus Lazio, then followed with wins, and then drew again with Lazio. Dortmund is, you know, a perennial contender near the top of the table in the Bundesliga. However, they've not had tremendous luck in the stages in the Champions League. 3 wins and 3 losses, losing most recently to PSG last year after winning 2-1 at home and subsequently losing to Paris 2-0. Dortmund has lost 7 of their 12 matches at this point of the Champions League. Let's see. Dortmund's lost the last 4 away matches in the round of 16. winning 8 of their last 13 European matches with 4 defeats, all coming on the road, managing only 5 wins in their last 19 away European matches. I think that the key here is going to come down to Holland. He scored in all 4 Champions League group stage matches he's played in. He did not play in 5 and 6. That leaves him tied with Neymar and Morata for going forward. I know those 3 are left in the competition, so they're going to be going for the Golden Boot. He has scored 16 goals in 12 Champions League games. That's the fastest in history. Again, the early odd favors here are Sevilla, but I think it's going to be a bit closer than what their stats are showing. I think Dortmund is trending pretty well, and I think this is going to be a competitive matchup.
Yeah, not one of the glamour ties of the last round of 16, it has to be said. But if I think, what people need to be aware of is the form that Dortmund are in at the moment. I mean, they're in shocking form at the moment. I think they lie 6th in the Bundesliga, and they are as up and down as any team in that sort of top 6 in Germany. Can't really find any form. Interesting point that Eric makes there about Haaland and his goal scoring. At the moment, I've watched a couple of their games recently, and they're not actually providing an awful lot of service for him. So I think Sevilla will be looking at that. From a Sevilla point of view, the group stage was, I think we alluded to it. It was a foregone conclusion. With Krasnodar and Rennes in there, there was only Chelsea and Sevilla going to go through. I think it was a confidence boost, certainly when they came over to London and drew 0-0 with Chelsea in the first round of matches. But obviously they were then beaten 4-0 in the home stadium by Chelsea. I think it was match day 5. And to be fair, their home form in Europe hasn't been great this season. I think they've drawn 2 and lost 2. And they obviously progressed. Recent form domestically, they're starting to score goals. And score goals, 2s and 3s per game, which was something that they struggled to do in the early parts of the season, certainly domestically, and that probably had a knock on effect to their performances in Europe. Watched them probably 2 weeks ago when they played Atletico. I think they got beat 2-0 in that game, or 2-1, I think it was. And they were outstanding. They were absolutely outstanding. And the amount of chances that they scored, it was like, the reins were off them. They've got a really good team. I've spoke about Sevilla before. They play lovely, attractive, free-flowing, attacking football. It almost reminds me of how United used to be sort of 15, 20 years ago. You score 2, we'll score 3 type mentality. I think over the last sort of 5-6 games, they're converting the chances that they're creating, which only bodes well for them in the Champions League. For me, I think Sevilla over the 2 ties will go through. As I said, it's not a glamour tie. Both teams are there on merit, but I think for me, Sevilla are going to go through.
Yeah, I don't know. One of the things, again, we're going to look at this line a little bit. We have a few minutes, so we're going to have a little fun with this. This is a pick'em game, which means, really, Vegas doesn't know who's going to win. But on the goal line, Borussia, if they win, it's plus 108 if you take that way. Sevilla, if they win, it's minus 123. Now you go over to the money line, you see a big difference. Plus 191 for a Borussia win. Plus 151 on a Sevilla win, and a plus 238 draw with an over-under of 2.5. So when you see that, that money line looks scary because the prices are so inflated compared to the goal line if you're paying attention. So what you want to do is you want to keep that in mind. Now, this total is 2.5 goals again. It's minus 108 for over, minus 107 for under. So they feel like this is going to be one of those games where it's going to be either a blowout, a rout, or maybe a draw. But one thing they're not expecting is this game to go over 2.5 goals because it's the minus 107. So when you look at those things, it's interesting to see. Now, we'll have the referee information, which FIFA referees at that level are a little bit different. They're a little bit more consistent because I think they meet more often. And don't forget that they're the most elite at what they do. That's important. Now, we got about 3 minutes left. What are you looking forward to watching this weekend, guys?
For me, the standout tie for me is obviously City, Liverpool. Man City at the moment, you know, constantly having conversations with my friends in the football world. And, you know, everybody gets excited at the moment. A lot of us are Man United fans. You know, there's a few of us who are City fans, Liverpool fans, Chelsea fans, Arsenal fans. But, you know, one of the standout things for me is you go back to, you know, 10 days ago when Man City played West Brom and they beat them 5-0. On their own, you know, in their own backyard. Listen, West Brom, that night, I probably could have got 11 ex-players that I played with that would have done a good job against West Ham that night. But that being said, the point we were making is that City's second string, if you like, are just as good as most of the, if not, you know, everybody under the top sixes, first teams in the Premier League. So, you know, a couple of injuries here and there won't really affect them. I mean, let's not forget, they've not had Aguero, you know, arguably for me, probably one of the best strikers I've ever seen. You know, he's 5'7", 5'8", something like that. But he's, you know, his record is absolutely astonishing. And, you know, lots of people were thinking he's out of the team, he's had COVID. There's been issues with injuries and things like that. He's not been fully fit for probably the best part of 18 months. And they, you know, they haven't really missed him. You turn the coin on Liverpool and you look at the injuries that they've had. I mean, you know, Jordan Henderson is England's captain. England's, you know, one of the most influential midfielders, if you like. And he's playing at centre-back for Liverpool at the moment, sort of just to buy the time. So, you know, their strength in depth has been... He's being tested in such a big way. And I think, you know, for me, City will City should, you know, go on and win that game quite convincingly. And then Liverpool will be, what, 9-10 points behind Manchester City. And obviously Man United have still got, you know, a big say in the matter. Leicester have, you know, Chelsea and Tottenham are playing tonight. So, you know, games are, you know, we have probably 4 or 5 games a day in the Premier League at the moment. So, you know, what we say tonight will change by this time tomorrow. And what we say tomorrow would be completely different as to how our picks are arranged on Monday or Tuesday. So, you know, it's brilliant to see these many games, you know, this amount of games. But, you know, that's the standout tie for me.
What do you got, Eck? You got about 45 seconds.
Listen, I think it's...
Sorry, Eck.
That's okay. I think that there's some exciting times in the Premier League right now. I mean, you've got Brighton, you know, beating a Liverpool. You've got Crystal Palace has won 2 games in a row. I mean, what's going on? I mean, it seems like there are a lot of teams here that are really coming around the corner in the second half of the season. I'm somewhat interested in the Arsenal-Villa game. The money lines, plus 172 for Arsenal, plus 166 for Villa. I mean, you know, where are we at with that? I mean, that seems exciting, those numbers. That should be a good match. And then again, you know, you got Newcastle. You know, Newcastle has had some success lately, and they're playing a Southampton. I think that's probably going to be a pretty good match as well. Southampton, a bit of up and down, you know, certainly coming off of a really difficult match this week. But yeah, I think those games are going to be exciting. And I think it's just exciting time in the Premier League overall.
All right. That's a great show, guys. Well done. Well done, fellas. Listen, if you want to catch their picks, get us at Cash with Flash. cashwithflash.com or on Instagram and Twitter at cashwithflash. And join us at CSN Sports Radio. We're there every night at 7 p.m. For Gary Lewis and Eric Laurendini, I'm Phil Nasons. Thanks for listening to Pro Soccer Weekly.
You've been listening to Pro Soccer Weekly. Join us in our next installment for all of your pro soccer news on Pro Soccer Weekly.
Pro Soccer Weekly.